when all that you see
are actors on your television singing off key.
What savvy, well-versed heroes can settle the
score
once more with TV. Welcome, Marlies and Marlies, to a bonus episode of Once More with TV, a podcast where we talk about whatever we want. I'm your co-host, Alex Kovnatsky, he, him, and I am a Rainbow Connection enthusiast.
Oh, and I'm your co-host, Liza Trushel, she, her. And I think next we really ought to start digging into Muppet Jane Austen, which has hit the public domain and I think could be fire.
Incredible, incredible stuff.
I'm just seeing Miss Piggy as Mrs. Bennet. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. 100%. They're both hilariously gossipy in just the right way.
Exactly. And Kermit is Mr. Bennet. I mean, you could not ask for a more dynamic duo.
Well, this week we're talking about Muppet Christmas Carol, released December 11th, 1992. Liza, I know you're a huge Muppet fan. I know that we talk about casting Muppet movies all the time.
A lot, yeah. We spend a lot of time doing that.
but tell our audience, what's your relationship with the Muppets or Christmas movies, holiday movies in general?
Oh, wow. I'll start with Muppets. Muppets is like, we've talked about this on the show, I grew up in a no TV, very limited TV household, and one of the few things that was allowed in my home were Muppets and Muppet-like creatures, so Sesame Street was allowed. So I have a deep and abiding love for the Muppets. This movie in particular, I watch this movie every single year without fail. For recent years, I've been going to live productions of it where they'll screen the film and have a live orchestra play along, which I highly recommend. It's fucking magical. It's also like exclusively millennials. Like there are like three children present every year, but it's like exclusively millennials who've watched this a million times, and there's like a hush that goes through the crowd or like a murmur before a really good joke or before like Beaker shows up. Like, it's really great. Highly recommend. If you can track one of those performances down, do it. You will not regret it.
That sounds incredible.
It's so good. It's so good. And holiday movies, there are years when I'm really into watching them and years when I'm not. I just, like, there's no telling what my mood's going to be. I think there's a wide breadth of quality of holiday movies. And sometimes it's really fun to watch the really shit ones. Mm-hmm. Anything with Chad Michael Murray, I'll show up. But yeah, I will say I am a strict, like, I can't start holiday movies until December. I can't start holiday stuff until December. That's been a real struggle actually moving to the UK, because the UK does not have Thanksgiving. They do not have a buffer holiday between Halloween and Christmas.
Oh,
and I think they start Christmas way too early. So by the time Christmas comes around, I'm done. I don't want to hear the music anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't want to walk through all of the... I do love Christmas lights. That actually never gets old. But, you know, it gets a little intense over here.
Totally. I was going to ask, how much of your motivation to move to London is inspired by this movie?
Oh my god, a lot of it. Those little, like, chimney pots, like, really had an effect on me as a child, and I'm not kidding. I think about it, like, every time I go outside. I live in a slightly higher-rise building than all of the buildings around me, and London, in general, doesn't have a lot of high-rises, especially outside of Central. So it's a lot of little houses with little chimney pots, and I think of that sweeping shot where one Muppet knocks over a chimney pot, like, literally every day of my life. Like, my neighborhood has all those little roofs, and all of the streets are crooked, and all of the buildings are a little crooked, and I'm like, this is it. This is London.
Amazing, amazing. As I was watching it for this episode, I was kind of thinking to myself, I was like, this motivated Liza for sure. Like, this is a core memory. Yeah.
Strong. What about you? Are you a Muppets guy?
I am a Muppets guy. I think I'm... You know, not that I think of them separately, but I am more of a Sesame Street guy than a Muppets guy.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just more familiar with their breadth of work. But love the Muppets, love everything puppets, especially Muppet puppets. I think they are goated for a reason.
The Jim Henson Creature Shop, like, first of all, it's responsible for the Muppets in Sesame Street, but it's also responsible for every puppet you've ever loved. I mean, totally. It's just one of those things. They do such incredible work. I mean, I just saw the live action, but the play version of My Neighbor Totoro in London.
That sounds
sick. Again, magical as fuck. But Jim Henson Creature Shop did all those puppets. There's like a 25-foot Totoro that is just like unbelievable to look at. And also all of the little like fucking chickens and stuff. Like, they're so good. It's so good. I mean, they're unparalleled in this game. They really have their game.
That's sick. I love that. Yeah, and I, you know, I don't understand people who don't like puppets, especially Muppet puppets. I like, they are so funny just in existence, and then everything they do is so lived in and real. There's so much care. But in terms of Muppet Christmas Carol, I actually have only watched this a few times. I think holiday movies in general are like a huge gap for me. I didn't really watch them growing up. They weren't something for me. You know, there's a couple that stand out that are like memorable for me. I would say like Home Alone or, It's a Wonderful Life are big ones. Mm-hmm. But this one, I do have a fond memory of watching with our little friend group in like early COVID over Zoom during the holidays. That might have been the first time I've ever seen it, actually.
I think it was, because I think you said that at the time and I got really angry.
That sounds right. That sounds exactly
That sounds right.
Right.
That sounds correct. Because I have this movie like front to back memorized. Like, this is one of those movies that you can drop me in at any point and I know the next line. Like, I've seen this Incredible. So many times.
Was anything different for you watching this in like kind of a more critical lens? Like, after, you know, as we have become hyper-analyzing these kinds of musical TV shows and movies, did it feel any different this time?
I think that's such a good question. I think it's interesting because my first instinct was to be, this movie has no flaws. Like, I was really going to come in and be like, if anybody criticizes this, we're ending the show. Like, I'm hanging up. So I had to sit back and be like, wait, there are parts of this that I even like have said to other people before in my life. Like, my family watches this movie every year and we all have parts we don't like. I still say I like this movie probably more than director Brian Henson does. I think I believe in it more than he did. We'll get to that. But yeah, I think it was interesting to like sit down and be like, what is it that I don't like about this moment, or that's not landing in this moment? Like, why is it this part never landed for me? Or why it was interesting to be like, why does this part work so well? About this is really singing? It was interesting.
Totally. Yeah, actually, let's talk about the Brian Henson of it all. I didn't realize I don't know much about the history of Jim Henson or anything like that, but I didn't realize that was his son, and that was shortly after Jim Henson died. Like, that is
Jim Henson
crazy.
Died in 1990, and this is 1992. So this is Brian Henson's first directorial debut. He's also playing Kermit, who is, of course, Jim Henson's character. So it is, I think, a very emotional journey for him, obviously. I think it is well directed. I think this is someone who obviously took a lot of artistic influence from his father and knew the characters so well. And all the rest of the Muppet actors are the same Muppet actors who've been doing it forever. The point on which Brian Henson and I disagree is the love is gone. That's the point on which he and I disagree. So this is the song that Belle sings. We're just going to jump in. Play by Meredith Braun, who, by the way, was at a screening of this that I went to once, one of those like live orchestra screenings. Just delightful.
That's so
crazy. It was just such a lovely moment. But it is a sad song. It is, of course, you know, there's no love left in this relationship. It's a pretty adult concept. he has cut it from many like released versions. There are certain VHSs that don't have it. There were DVDs. You could pick which version you wanted. You have to now on Disney Plus go into the like extras and select the full length version in order to get it. And I do agree that it's a different, like, emotional, it might lose a few kids, but I do think it's so key to Scrooge's emotional journey.
Mm-hmm.
And losing it, you don't get, like, there's no reason that Scrooge should be crying by the, and, like, that Rizzo and Gonzo should be crying if you don't have that song. And also, the final song is a reprise of that, The Love mm-hmm. We Found, which makes no fucking sense if you've cut the song. So always leave it in. That's the, I always, always, always watch the Love We Found version. I think when we watched it as a group, we didn't watch the Love We Found version and we paused it and went to YouTube.
Yep. That's exactly what we did.
We were so upset. And went and watched it on YouTube and then played the movie.
So two things on this. One, mm-hmm. I wonder how much of that is a Brian Henson decision, right? Like, maybe you know more than I do on that, but it does feel like a producer note. It does feel like the intention was to have
what
this.
What I understand is it is a Brian Henson decision. That's what's been publicly stated, is that it's Brian Henson's. It's a director's cut issue.
Interesting. Yeah, because mm-hmm. here's the other thing, and don't hate me immediately on this episode. I can understand why it is cut. Like, it does, there is a logic to it, because I think it does feel out of place. Like, there's no kind of momentum coming into that moment. And then coming out of that moment, it is so, like, joyous. And it feels difficult, but I don't think the solution is cutting it. I think they needed to figure something else out.
I think the song needed to, there was an adjustment that needed to be made. And unfortunately, by the time we were making the adjustment, we were in the edit room. And that was the wrong time to make it. That needed to be done at script and composition stage.
Mm-hmm.
Because I agree, it hits such a low note emotionally. And it is, again, this is primarily a children's movie. That is a very mature concept.
Mm-hmm.
That we've tried to turn into song. It's a bit of a repetitive song. It's probably not my favorite song, but I do think at the end of the day, cutting it was the wrong decision.
Yeah, I agree. And they also both sound really great on it.
She's lovely. He's really good. It kind of like, it also, them having a song sort of like lends a little bit of credence to there being that many flashbacks, and for having mm-hmm. two actors play those parts, it like makes their whole thing make more sense.
Mm-hmm.
I
wonder how much the decision came down to this is a lot of screen time without Muppets, you know.
Yeah, it is a lot of time without Muppets. Of course, we do cut to Rizzo and Gonzo crying on the thing, which always gets me.
But you're so right. Without it, we just cut to them crying, and we don't really understand why anybody's crying. It doesn't make sense.
No, they just sort of broken up gently, and we're all weeping.
But going backwards, let's get back to the beginning. That sweeping shot, like you were talking about before, of all those miniatures of London, it's just such a good way to set up the film.
Oh, it's so fun.
I love a bunch of miniatures, and then like Rizzo the Rat as himself and all those credits are just
yeah,
so it gets me so hyped for the movie.
Oh, it's such a hype. It's so it's so electric, that intro. And yeah, Rizzo the Rat as himself. I mean, we go straight to a street market where we meet Charles Dickens and Rizzo the Rat. Charles Dickens as played by Gonzo, who was chosen because he was the least likely to be Charles Dickens.
That's so funny.
It's a real expansion of his acting repertoire up until this point, which was mostly being shot out of cannons at the, on the Muppet Show.
What do you think about this choice as having like a Phoebe Waller-Bridge narrator throughout this whole thing?
I fucking love it, dude. I think it's so brilliant. It's also like they did it in order to remain true to like the prose of Dickens, and they do. Like he's directly quoting the book like all the time, which is really fun.
Yeah.
Like it kind of like, I don't know, it brings you right into the world. It's weird. There's like a blue whatever being Charles Dickens. The back of my hand joke gets me every time.
The jokes in this whole movie are so dumb. They're so stupid. And I mean that in the most affectionate way possible. They're just so silly.
every joke in this lands for me. It's pretty amazing. The dumber the joke, the happier I am. I think that might be because I grew up on the Muppets. Like, the stupider your bit and the more you commit, I'm really there. And that's really what the Muppets are all about.
100%. I do really like the narration, especially because anytime the Muppets start to, like, lean into kind of teaching moments, like, it feels almost educational. By like talking about Charles Dickens and the ideas, I think that works for me every time. Totally. I like that.
It makes this text really accessible. Mm-hmm. It really opens up this like very important English literature text to an entirely different audience and makes it feel like just a fun story Gonzo's telling you.
Totally.
And it really, yeah, this was like, this is obviously the first version of this I ever watched. I watched this when I was like a very small child. So this is the first version of A Christmas Carol and still to me, the only proper filmed version. This is the biblically accurate Christmas Carol. I don't watch other versions. I actually, when we studied A Christmas Carol in high school, I convinced my teacher to let us watch this version.
Incredible.
When we finished reading the book.
Incredible.
because I felt very strongly this is the only one I want to watch.
I mean, that makes sense. I'm sure there's a million Christmas carols out there. I don't know if I've seen any one of them besides this one.
This is the good one.
The beginning of this, they have that, you know, sweeping shot of all the miniatures, but then they kind of go seamlessly into the actual town, and the Muppets feel so lived in this world, as they often do in this, but I think this one especially really nails that early on. And then we get a Dutch angle Scrooge entrance, and we get the opening number.
So funny. This opening number that is just, Scrooge is a bitch, and we hate him. Like, it's just everybody shitting on Scrooge. It's awesome. Yeah.
It's everyone shitting on Scrooge, and then also talking about how they're kind of teasing, there's more here than this, right? Like, mm-hmm. he does have a troubled past or something like that.
Well, there's that little choir that goes, he must be so weary, he must be so sad. Mm-hmm. And then he doesn't tip them, and they're like, nope, he's just bad. Just a bad person.
All of the food Muppets are so good. Those
food
vegetable
Muppets are hilarious
ones.
Every time. Yeah.
They're so good.
Yeah, especially talking food Muppets. They're really something. I will say there was the Jim Henson Creature Workshop, like we said, does every project you've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And they worked on The Mandalorian, of course. Like, they designed that Grogu. But also, there were a couple Mandalorian street market scenes where I flash back very intensely to this. There's, like, a little alien thing roasting on a spit. I was like, this is just dark Muppet Christmas Carol is what I'm watching. Like, because I'm now so trained to pick out a Henson Creature Workshop thing. I was like, that's just a little guy. That's just a little guy that they made.
Speaking of little guys, we get your iconic line that's on your sweatshirt right now from this. No cheeses for his Mises.
Possibly the greatest line ever written in the history of cinema. I'm just throwing it out there. No cheeses for his Mises has captured a culture in a way that I like very few things have.
I mean, they're just so gosh darn cute, right?
They're so cute, these little mice. And then this just like blatant, incorrect grammatical rhyme that we do. This is like a quote within my family home. We also just say it all the time for like everything. But yeah, whenever you don't get something you want, ugh, no cheeses for these Mises. You know?
At the risk of angering you, my one note here, it's a little long. I know we're showing a lot of different characters and having a lot of comedic moments, but it is really hitting it over the head that Scrooge sucks. And I kind of want to see Scrooge suck by this point more than have people tell me. But that's my only note for it, is that it gets a little samey after a while.
Yeah, I just really, I think I get so much joy out of seeing so many Muppets. I mean, that's really what this is, right? Is mm-hmm. we're just showing all of the Muppets we have. Like, they're really, it's just everybody. There's a lot of, like, yeah, little goofs going on. The cats running around the rafters. There's, I don't know. There's just everybody you've ever seen and new folks. I mean, the mice, as far as I know, I don't know. I don't remember seeing them in other movies.
Yeah, I don't think so. Surely rats, but not mice. Yeah.
I mean, Rizzo. An all-time rat. Also, all-time someone rat. Who gets funnier the older I get. Like, the more I watch this movie, the more I find Rizzo to be my anchor. He is sort of the Greek chorus of this movie. That's what I was thinking about as I was watching it. And I just really, he grounds me. I fucking love Rizzo the rat.
It's so funny to me because I had the moment where I was like, Rizzo is hilarious, but also so much of his comedy is just falling from high
hilarious.
Places.
Hilarious.
Always be funny.
He's just always eating. He's got this very like Brad Pitt and Ocean's 11 thing, but he did it first. So actually, is Brad Pitt doing a Rizzo the Rat?
Wow, incredible.
Han's little bag of chips. It's like Han's all of my favorite chips. Guys are always sitting in the back eating food.
we get the scene after this song, and I gotta say, the thing that I think is probably the most difficult line for them to thread, but they do it incredibly well, is like having your Muppet jokes and then also having Scrooge be such an asshole, and it's happening back and forth, but it works. I think it's a really difficult line to toe. But that opening scene really establishes that well, totally. I think.
Well, Michael Caine very famously said when he accepted this role that he was going to play it as if he was playing it for the Royal Shakespeare Company. Mm-hmm. He said, I won't wink. I'm not going to do anything Muppety. I'm going to play it as serious as I can. And he does. Like, at no point do you think he's interacting with a fucking puppet. Like, he is, like, dead on just doing his best Scrooge. And I can't take credit for this thought. This is like a tweet that I saw a million years ago. But someone once said that like the reason this works is because Michael Caine doesn't act like a Muppet at all. And the reason Muppet Treasure Island works is because Tim Curry plays a Muppet.
Yes.
There are 100%. Two ways to succeed in these movies. And yeah, Michael Caine does a very serious Scrooge. It is a very mm-hmm. earnest and like lived in Scrooge that is very, very mean. He's horrible. I mean, he's a horrible person. Scrooge's open is like homeless people should die and decrease the surplus population. Horrific person. He also, I'll just throw that there. He said very explicitly that he based his characterization off Wall Street folks. So, like,
yeah, I mean, it's there. It's there for sure.
Yeah, he was like, that's just who this is now.
It's an interesting thing, and we can talk about it a little bit more broadly, but Christmas Carol as a story has never really 100% resonated with me because I don't have a lot of time for stories about people who are assholes suddenly finding out that empathy is a good thing because it might tarnish their legacy, right? Like, I don't think that's a great motivation to be a good person. But Michael Caine does such an amazing job in this. Like, low-key, maybe one of his best performances of all time.
High-key, one of his best performances.
The emotional highs and lows are crazy.
No humans makes it a better performance. The idea that he did that like opposite Beaker makes the difficulty went up so high. He's doing this on hard mode.
There is something to it where like you can tell Michael Caine is getting a little bit of joy out of being dicks to puppets, right? Like that's there.
He like throws that wreath at that little bean, the rabbit. It's also very funny because like I've watched all of the behind the scenes for this a million times because I'm who I am. And he like in multiple different little interviews just talks about how much he loved the puppet that played Bean. He's like, it's the cutest thing I've ever seen in my life.
And I get to be a dick to it.
And he's like, I threw a wreath at it.
It's so good. But that whole scene sets us up perfectly. And we have Beaker in a hat. Love Beaker in a hat. That's always good.
Love Beaker all the time. I mean, Beaker is so... I mean, we've talked about Beaker on this show before. Mm-hmm. My love for Beaker is well documented throughout my life. he's so important to me. We get one of my favorite bits, which is the... the rats asking for more coal and then going, this is an island in the sun. Like, I love it, just dump it like that.
I love them carrying the eviction notices and like falling over.
Yeah, I mean, again, so a lot of the rats bits are just rats falling. Like, that's half of what rats do in this movie.
And all of their lines are just either agreeing or disagreeing with what people are saying. Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. No, not that, yes.
Yeah. Of course, you get Rizzo being wiped on the window. Thank you for making me a part of this. That's a classic.
So good. After that, we get the next song, One More Sleep Till Christmas. Liza, what are your thoughts on this one?
This is such a sweet little song. This is something that goes through my head every Christmas Eve. It's so cute. I love all of the rat shenanigans in the open of this song are so brilliant. Like the little rat that's using that sauna and like the ones that are like catapulted up to close the windows. Like there's so much rat business going on at the beginning of this.
Rat business.
This is Kermit's number. This is Kermit's first number. Mm-hmm. And he's of course playing Bob Cratchit, who's going to be our like little the thing that causes us to be empathetic.
Totally. Honestly, a great Kermit performance, too.
A wonderful Kermit.
Because sometimes Kermit can veer into being, like, too much of a spokesperson of the themes of the movie, but he is just, like, being a nice, good person. Like, that is just his existence in this.
Yeah.
And Kermit's positive and
thing.
In
spite it's tough of to be a straight man and be a Muppet. That's, like, a really tough life to live. And that is the life Kermit lives as normally, of course, the stage manager of the Muppets and director of the Muppet Show. He really works in this. Kermit, he's someone you love immediately because it's fucking Kermit, you know, so that goes a long way. You have this built-in reservoir of sympathy for him, and then he can do that hemming and hawing sort of like very gentle. I mean, he manages to sort of do that very British thing without being British at all. But yeah, One More Sleep Till Christmas is very sweet. It's a very sweet song.
I think more songs should have a penguin skating interlude.
Skating interlude is fantastic. Which is just like, hey, puppetry's fun. Like, that's just puppeteers having a good time. And we've talked about this. I mean, you and I have talked about this at least off mic. One of my favorite jokes that can be made is a Muppet yeeting across a screen.
Oh, yes.
Which we 100%. Get in this. So I'm satisfied.
We get so much of it. I think maybe the biggest accomplishment for me in this song is that I hate seeing Muppet legs. I don't want to know that they have a lower half of their body. And we see a lot of rat legs in this.
A lot of rat legs.
But it's fine. I was like, this works. I don't feel weird about this. Maybe it's because they're so tiny. But
maybe it's because they're so little, yeah.
Yeah. that was good. I like that. Next, we get the introduction of, I think, maybe in my heart, my favorite Muppets.
Statler and Waldorf.
is Beaker your favorite Muppet, or is it the combo
Beaker
of Statler
is
and Waldorf?
My mother's favorite Muppet, so part of why I'm so attached to Beaker. It's part of it's just a sentimental. It makes my mom laugh in a way basically nothing else on the planet can.
You also don't need a reason. Beaker is goated.
No, Beaker is goated. He's God. He's incredible. But no, for me personally, it is Statler and Waldorf.
Like, I think it's just because we are Statler and Waldorf.
Exactly. Like, that's my entire being is sitting in a box. Like, of course, normally they're in the box at the theater heckling and making dumb puns. That's really their base setting. Of course, usually there's only one Jacob Marley in the book. The choice to make it two Marleys is chef's kiss. I mean, an incredible choice. An incredible choice to have Marley and Marley. I also just want to know, before we get to Marley and Marley, is that Scrooge invented girl dinner?
Just with his cheese and
just with his little cheese and bread by the fire. That's girl dinner.
I had a note in this, but I didn't know how to put it into this episode of, like, there is something about his little cheese dinner in his robe sitting in a chair that, like, made me think, this is Liza. This is what Liza does.
You are so not wrong. Like, that is my base setting all the time. A little cheese, a little bread, a little fire. In my little
I want you to have a little sleeping cap.
I need a sleeping cap. Nobody has ever needed a sleeping cap more than me. And I'm just going to throw it out there.
But yes, we get Statler and Waldorf. The other thing I was going to say on the casting, I kind of have this moment where I think this story is just perfect for Muppets casting. Like, everybody falls seamlessly. Like, Fozziwig is the actual name of that character?
Yeah, it's Fezziwig, I think. But yeah, still. What the fuck, man?
It's crazy.
It's so close. It's insane. Yeah, this was very ripe for Muppeting. This is a very easy story to make Muppets, I think.
But yes, we get Marley and Marley, the song, which did have a lot of Sadler and Waldorf legs, and I didn't want to see that, but at least they're ghosts.
Normally they truly do exist, like, you know, shoulders.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Really,
yeah.
Don't see a lot of Marley and of Sadler and Waldorf. Yeah, it is alarming to see their lower halves. I totally agree. But Marley and Marley is probably my favorite song in this movie. Marley and Marley is also big within my family. I think it's like, whoa.
Well, I love the intention of that, right? Like, at first it's to spook, but at the end it's that they're getting like trapped by these chains and they're like actually wailing, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's fun to mix that up.
It's great. It's great. I mean, this is the first hint you get that this movie might be a little spooky. I mean, actually, no, you get that a little bit at the open of this scene, because we get Marley was dead to begin with, dead as a doornail, and Rizzo goes, whoa, man, this is a kid's movie.
Pump the brakes.
Yeah, which is great stuff. And this is kind of the first scene where you get like, oh, this might be spooky. Like, this part kind of did, like, him walking around his house in the dark kind of got spooky to me as a kid. The doorknob turning into Marley's face kind of spooked me as a kid. Like, this is, I think, you start to get, like, oh, this movie, it is a Muppet movie, and it's going to be fun. Rizzo's still here. But, like, it is going to be a little spooky.
I mean, it is kind of a weird thing where they're being, like, the kooky Statler and Waldorf shitting on people thing at first, but then they're, like, confession that they're kind of in chains and they're bound by the awful things that they
did in life. Well, they, like, talk about, like, the kids at the orphanage and their little frozen teddy bears, and they make a joke about it. But, yeah, they are getting, like, chained up, and then, of course, the chains start singing because this is the Muppets, but...
Of course.
Yeah, it gets a little, like, you know, they're dragged back down to, I mean, hell. That's where they're going. So yeah, it gets a little like, oh, okay.
I love the Rizzo nose kiss, obviously iconic. Right at the end of this song.
Oh, so cute.
I think he gets the I'm from Jersey part in there. He does.
Fucking love Rizzo, man. Fucking love that guy.
From there, that's when, like, the actual Ghosts of Christmas Past and all that shenanigans starts, right? They, like, get swept away and are flying through those miniatures again.
Yeah.
I love when they Rizzo and Gonzo hit a tree and end up with a chicken, and that's, like, meant to be reasonable.
You listen. And Gonzo has a thing for chickens, and we know that.
We know this. We know this.
That's okay too. I will say, this is for me the weakest part of the movie is the Ghost of Christmas Past. Particularly the ghost herself. So the decision when this movie was first pitched, they did have Muppets as the ghosts of past, present, future, like existing Muppets, and eventually the decision was made, I think it was meant to be like, I don't know. I do remember that Miss Piggy was maybe going to be the Ghost of Christmas Present at one point. Like, that was in the original pitch. Anyway, eventually the decision was made to make them new Muppets, which I actually think works really well overall. I actually really like them being new Muppets. The only Muppet I don't fucking like is this one. I think it's creepy. I think it's weird. I don't think it lands well. I think she's off-putting. And I think some of the scenes are a little long here. Again, we're relying on human scenes, and that's not why we're here. So for me, this is the weakest part of the film. I mean, I'm still having a good time when Gonzo and Rizzo are here, when they're on screen, when they're on that little shelf, and he has like 22,000 brothers and sisters, and you know, all that stuff. I love Sam the Eagle as the schoolmaster. I mean, absolutely
totally.
Brilliant.
Totally.
I also think him saying business gets me every time for some fucking reason.
And his just inability to not be American.
Yeah, he's like, you're the British way. It's like really good. Like, I do think the Muppet parts of this are really good. We just spend too long with the fucking human children.
It's tough. I mean, yeah, this movie does suffer from kind of a momentum issue. Like the beginning is really strong, and then it's kind of like we're waiting for musical numbers at a certain point, because we have to get through a lot of the emotional weight of the film. But it's difficult. You need both. So you know, I don't envy you them do. There.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, this is the toughest part. It's just a bit of like the way I'll phrase it is, again, I love this movie. This is the part where I would get up to go to the bathroom if I had
sure.
to. This is the most missable part. And then we get to, I mean, the school days part is particularly boring to me. I won't lie. But then it gets back up again when we get to Fozziwig's Christmas party. Because now
looks
back
like a fun party.
Also, we have Light the Lamp, Not the Rat. Light the Lamp, Not the Rat. Which is really good stuff. And yeah, this party is banging. I mean, this is a great party.
Yeah, anytime you have a Muppet band around, I'm like, all the way up, you know? Like,
Dr.
that's
Teeth and the Electric Mayhem or whatever
it's
they're
so
called.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely great. Animal.
Animal putting his whole weight behind playing the triangle is so good.
It's really funny. It works. I love Animal. And yeah, we do get Statler and Waldorf in their natural habitat up on a balcony heckling. So that feels good.
Right. This is the most Muppets the movie feels like. You know what I mean? Like most like classic Muppet Show Muppets.
Yeah, in that we have like a fucking wall of Muppets and then like three human beings speaking to each other and a Muppet.
Yeah. You know? And then we have Michael Caine going like, this is too expensive, and it's like, dude, look around you. This is the best. Are you talking about finances right now?
I know.
That's crazy.
You really get it. You're like, this guy is a capitalist and that's not why we're here.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's sometimes I feel like this movie does a good job at building empathy for Scrooge, and sometimes I kind of feel like it misses the mark. Like, especially in the school days part where I'm like, yeah, that sucks. Christmas can be a really lonely time for a lot of people, but it's also like, I don't know. It's an interesting way to kind of build empathy in a way, but I also feel like you just need to make some friends, dude.
Yeah,
nobody around you was mean, right? Like, everybody was very happy to you. And people are telling you, hey, put the book down and, like, have some fun with people. So, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's a difficult one.
That's tough because that's just the source material, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
the entire source material of this is just, he didn't have a lot of friends. but, yeah, this is where we meet Belle, of course. Because she's related to Fozziwig somehow. Now I can't remember this. I just love I love Fozzie Bear in this. This is like a really good deployment of Fozzie. I also just love that he has Fozziwig and Mom. He just calls her Mom. Like, that really gets me. It's also like, nobody has ever been so serious about saying, it's Fozziwig's Rubber Chicken Factory. And I think that he should have gotten an Oscar for that line delivery.
For that. Just that one.
It was just incredible. You've never heard someone so earnest.
I want an Oscar category for just one line delivery.
Oh,
I
my God. Oh, who do we call?
I do think Fozzie Bear can, if he's on the screen for too long, become a little bit insufferable. So I think in small doses, he's perfect.
Exactly.
Right?
So this is perfect. I agree. So Fozzie is like very like reminiscent of this kind of era of stand-up comedy that we weren't really exposed to, so like all we get is the Fozzie Bear version of it, and so the routine's a little dry by the time it comes to us because it's making fun of something we've never watched, which is like that borscht belt comedy humor. And like there's only so many times I can hear him go waka waka before I'm like, okay,
okay.
Like I get it, I get the bit, like let's move on. So to me, this is like the perfect amount of Fozzie Bear. I think he absolutely shines.
Totally. Then we get When Love Is Gone, as we were talking about before at the opening, and damn, Michael Caine is just such a good actor,
such
huh?
a good actor, bro. It's so crazy. This hot is, take. I think, where you... Hot take. Is he not a sir yet? I don't think he is, which is, like, kind know. Of
This is what knighted him, yeah.
This alone is worth an OB. Like, this is work for the British Empire. I've never felt more for a British man than I have in this film. And that includes my husband.
So true.
Nobody has done better PR for Brits than this role for Sir Michael Caine, who is a sir mind.
For real. Like, those tears are, like... He's, like, ugly crying.
He's ugly crying, and you feel it.
It doesn't, like, steal from the scene, too. Like, it's perfectly in the background. And I think, if I'm being honest, I think this song is kind of fine. Mm-hmm. But I think the acting from it really sells it.
Yeah, I really think so, too. I think that's what locks it into the movie for me, and therefore makes it uncuttable, as I said. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that that's what makes this completely uncuttable from the film. It is so jarring. I mean, he really earns it. Like, he really mm-hmm. earns that outpour of emotion, and it comes off of, he does such a good job of coming from that high of revisiting Fozziwig's Christmas party and going straight to this. Like, you really feel the turn. And it is just like, it's gutting. I mean, it's just gutting every time I watch it, to be honest. I've watched this movie like upwards of 50 times conservatively. It gets me every time.
As the expert of Muppet's Christmas Carol, mm-hmm. I have a really important question for you here, Liza. Mm-hmm. Is Michael Caine in love with the ghost of Christmas Present?
Yeah, I think so.
Because here's the thing. He's so sad. And then he becomes so happy. Like, the minute the Ghost of Christmas Present says, like, no, I'm a large absent-minded spirit, Michael Caine's like, this fucking guy.
Like, this fucking guy, this is my guy right here. Like, there's an immediate connection between the two of them.
And he's, like, making jokes, you know?
Oh, my God. He becomes, like, he turns into, like, my dad during this segment, which is crazy.
He's like dancing to the songs. He's
dancing, by the way, is peak. That's
great.
It's unreal. It's so good.
It's exactly so good. How little... Scrooge ought to dance.
Yeah, it's this little really awkward movement, and it's so cute. It's really endearing because it's so like, this is a man who's never danced in his fucking life,
but he's feeling it move through his body.
He's feeling it, and he's just going for it. It's like, yeah, it really does give like drunk uncle at a wedding, but like only moving a little bit. It's great.
I gotta be, the switch up of him personally is crazy, and the only solution I have is that he just loves this spirit.
He's intoxicated by this spirit. Like, he's just so excited by this spirit, and that kind of, yeah, I had to feel, it almost feels like so real that part of me is like, is he acting or is he just really excited about this puppet? Like,
I like the puppet a lot. Yeah, I think he's great. Very funny.
I think the puppet's really good, but no, he's just so happy. He just loves this puppet so much.
Yeah, totally. And this is further in the future, but when he has to leave the puppet, he's like, please don't go.
Yeah, no, he's like, they are immediately best friends. He's like, you are my best friend that I've ever had.
Of course, during this, we get the It Feels Like Christmas number. Mm-hmm. And I think this is... maybe my favorite group number from this. Yeah. Like, I think it's pretty electric.
It's so fun. It's again a big like Muppet group number. We love that movie. We've got dancers mm-hmm. coming in, like human dancers. We got again like just such a wonderful showcasing of the sets we built here, which are obviously like miniaturized kind of cartoonized versions of London, which are so fun and rich mm-hmm. and like textured and just delightful to look at. And like you can see like some of the shop names are hard to see, but some of them are named after Muppets, which is like really fun. Like there's like a little Statler mm-hmm. and Waldorf shop, and there's like which is really cute. It's a really joyful song. And yeah, it just, it has a Christmassy feel. Like, this is a very, totally. It's very warm and cute and sweet.
Yeah, I think most of the music from this movie feels like Christmas music, but I think this probably feels the most like that.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, maybe it's because it's called It Feels Like Christmas.
It feels like Christmas, yeah. Maybe there's something in that. Who are we to say? We got to do some more research.
We're not scientists.
But yes, we have that scene. It is probably like a big high, and then we go down again to a big low. Yeah. Seeing a whole bunch of people talk shit about you in real time sounds awful.
Sucks, dude. Yeah, it's pretty brutal. Again, this is like where we employ humans, because it's kind of like the most cutting when human beings do it. So it's Fred and Clara, his wife, and it sucks. Like, it really hurts, because Scrooge is trying to get in on the game, and then he's the butt of the joke, and it hurts. Like, again, I credit Michael Caine. It hurts to watch him realize what's going on.
Like, he's really good at looking sad. He's incredibly good at it.
Yeah, it's really unbelievable.
Because the thing is like, they're not in the wrong. Scrooge sucks, and no, they have like every asshole. Right to make fun of him.
He's like a full asshole. Like, no, they're completely correct. And it just sucks, because, you know, he's like starting to maybe make a shift, but only you've seen that, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
They have no reason, again, to think he's fallen asleep and woken up a different fucking person.
Yeah, which is wild. I like that everybody kind of just accepts it, and they're like, we'll take it. Let's not question this. We get, I don't actually know what the next song is called, but the one, it's like that short snippet where Kermit and Tiny Tim are like walking together and singing a little scat.
Yeah. The little a cappella bit that they do together.
Low key, I think this is my favorite song from the whole movie. Dude, it's great. It's really good.
Yeah, it's a really good song. It kind of rips.
they have like good, like, they're playing with rhythm, they're playing with harmony, and it's like really endearing. Like, we I mean, I don't know if it's the puppet or the actor, but man, Tiny Tim is so fucking cute. And
yeah, the puppet's named Robin. He is traditionally Kermit's nephew. In the lore.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, that's right. I don't know. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. It's Robin. Yeah, it really works. It does actually sort of give you a really good insight into these are two people who understand each other's rhythms. As silly as that sounds, it's just like two people who obviously spend a long time together, have made up this little song together that's just theirs. It does actually give like this really good, like, oh, these two people are really, really close and they love each other like very much. It's also just a fun bit of puppetry with like what is clearly like sort of like a rolling, like a giant cylinder that's rolling underneath them, and they're staying stationary while we move things behind them. It's just like a really interesting bit of puppetry. It's really solid. It's such a banger. It's electric. I love this band.
Totally. And we also get three Miss Piggies in one scene. I mean,
absolutely incredible. I mean, Miss Piggy as Mrs. Cratchit. First of all, Miss Piggy is the woman she is. Oh my god. I am obsessed with Miss Piggy. I think she's honestly a feminist icon. I think she's so important. I think she's incredible. I've been trying to track down. She wrote a self-help book in the 80s. It is not in print anymore.
What?
I know. It's called Miss Piggy's Guide to Life. And there's like a copy of it going at this store in Seattle, and I'm like so close to paying $100 for this book.
I mean, I'm excited for this Miss Piggy project that's coming out too.
Oh my god, this Cola Scola Miss Piggy project. What a dream team.
What a dream team. Two divas. That's gonna be great.
I mean, Piggy's one of the divas of our time. Like, she is truly that bitch all the time. She is absolutely incredible. I love her so much. She's a hilarious Mrs. Cratchit. Also, I love how we're like, don't worry about what a pig and a frog's baby would look like. Girls are pigs and frogs are boys. Don't think about it.
Listen, it works for me.
It works for me. I'm fine. It works for me. The two genders.
But they have a nice little Christmas Eve dinner together. And we get the song Bless Us All. And man, that's such a sweet number.
It's very sweet. I mean, again, they do a very good job. Tiny Tim needs to be so cute that it changes a man's life. Exactly. He needs to be so endearing that it works. We also get, of course, Rizzo falling down the chimney, landing on the goose, which is great stuff. Again, just rats falling, always going to make me laugh.
Always going to be good. The ones where they get hit by the open windowsill.
Oh, hilarious. Like, it's absolutely so hysterical.
When they do it like the second or third time, it's like, oh my god,
that's when it really
incredible.
Lands.
Yeah.
That's when it really, really lands.
But yeah, the harmonies are really lovely in this song. I think this is maybe what my favorite most composed song, or like the ones that have my favorite melodies and harmonies in it. There's also something about how Kermit's eyes have that like line through the pupil and Tiny Tim's doesn't, that make it, I don't know, it does something to his face where I believe him more. So I don't know what I'm trying to say with that. It's like there's something about him that makes it extra cute and like baby-like.
Yeah,
to
I've never thought of that, but totally. It totally gives him a little bit of a cuter feel than Kermit, who's got a weird, I mean, his eyes are more based on frogs. That's where that line comes from, right? I mean, they were on the original just two ping pong balls cut in half and then drawn on. But
Yeah, and this is when Scrooge starts to change. I mean, he's been changing, but this is when I think it really affects him. It does make me go, God damn, are rich people this naive? Like,
yeah,
they don't
I mean, it does take the ghost of Christmas present saying, you literally earlier today said that this kid should hurry up and die. Like, that was you, bro. He's like, wait,
but
what?
I do like the idea that anybody can change with just a little bit of empathy. I think that's a great message.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, wild.
Insane.
And then we go full creepy.
We
Rizzo
do.
And Gonzo have to like leave
have
because
leave.
It's going to get
They're
so
like, hey,
creepy.
We'll see you at the finale. Which is a funny line. We also get a really great bit of CGI with the Ghost of Christmas Present disappearing, which is like what it gives is like full early Star Trek, which is like when they would be beamed somewhere, and all it is them like we're fading to a version of the shot that didn't have them in it. Incredible. Don't change any of it. we do get the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, who scares the shit out of me to this day. He is really spooky. I don't like his vibe.
Yeah, creepy hooded figures. It works. It works. That really lands.
It really lands.
It is also like, I know this is played as a joke, but it is genuinely haunting, the idea of people looting your shit and selling it after you die for like pennies, you know?
Yeah.
That is terrifying.
Yeah,
actually,
it is really spooky. Yeah, that scene. I think like when I was little, I didn't really get why it was there or what was happening. And also that scene with like the pigs talking about where they're gonna get lunch, which is like maybe a little long, but does work for me now as an adult. Mm-hmm. I do think this is the part that like when I was little, I didn't understand as much, and now as an adult, I'm much more interested in this part than I was before. Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting level of depth that they're taking it to, which you know, the Muppets don't shy away from usually, but I think this one, this whole movie especially, you know, really engages with dark themes.
Totally, because then we eventually get in this part to Ebenezer finding the, you know, determining that it's his own grave and like having a whole ass meltdown, which is, you know, pretty bleak.
Yeah.
And of course Tiny Tim dies in this.
Yes.
Which is
his little chair and little hat and little cane.
It sucks, actually.
It sucks.
They're so small and they're so cute. And it really sucks to have that little empty chair. It really is sad.
And you know, some people might disagree with me on this, but shortly after, Rizzo and Gonzo fall off a window again, and I think that's how you bring the tone back. Like, I think that's
a
masterclass.
I completely agree. I completely agree. That's exactly how we bring it back, baby. We're back. We're so back.
We're so fucking back. We get Thankful Heart after this, and Michael Caine sounds really great. He's got a very lovely voice, and it's perfect for this. He's doing exactly as much as he needs to be doing in it.
Totally. It's mostly talk singing. Like, there's, again, for Scrooge is someone who's, this is essentially the first time he's probably ever experienced joy. There's no reason he should be a brilliant singer. It should be talk singing. It's a very, it's really sweet. It's an incredibly endearing song. He does a really good job on it. He, again, just interacts with puppets as if they're people, which is endearing as hell, especially the little ones when he has to look like very far down. When he gives Bean those like 5 shillings to go get a turkey.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, very sweet.
A remarkable lad. I say that sometimes when my fantasy football players are doing particularly
which you are crushing right now, by the way. We gotta say you're destroyed.
I needed to bring it up.
The scene right after that where Scrooge is doing a bit with Bob Cratchit being it's such a wild move.
It's crazy.
But
it's crazy. You have not earned that trust. You have not earned that trust at all. It
is
crazy.
His employer.
It is high key wild.
And then he just brings the whole town to his house.
High key wild. Only works because they're Muppets. If you did that to a real ass person, I would fucking burn your house down. I'd be so upset.
Listen, if somebody wants to pay off my mortgage, I'll take it.
That would be cool. I won't lie. That would be really rad. We also get the, like, one of the most quoted lines from this film, which is, Tiny Tim, who did not die.
Not die.
An incredible delivery. And I will say, I looked in my copy of A Christmas Carol, and I don't know which came first. Again, chicken egg. But Tiny Tim, who did not die, is in the book.
They must have seen that and they were like, that's hilarious.
That's hilarious.
Gotta run with that.
Like, he is quoting Dickens when he says Tiny Tim who did not die.
That's brilliant.
Absolutely.
And then, yeah, we get the last song, which I have the same note that you mentioned before. Doesn't this song not make sense if we don't have the original?
Doesn't at all. Because it becomes a full circle thing, right? Like, the love was gone from Scrooge's life, but he found it again. And, like, but if you just say the love we found, like, that's great. I guess you did find love. Like, why are we talking about this now?
Totally.
Why aren't we doing a more sensible reprise if you didn't have that song would be It Feels Like Christmas or something like that.
Sure. And then we pretty much end from there, right? It's a pretty sweet song. It's a good reprise. It kind of does exactly the function it needs to. But again, it needs to have the original in order for it to make sense at all.
Yeah, totally.
Any other thoughts about this film? Obviously, you are the Muppets Christmas Carol expert in the room.
I love this fucking movie, dude. I think, like, I mean, there are so many great moments. I mean, I love a Muppet. I love cameos from, like, other Muppets that have smaller parts. Like, when the Swedish Chef is just, like, at the party. Love the Swedish Chef. An all-time Muppet.
All-timer, for sure.
Somehow gets away with having human hands, and it's not creepy.
That's so true.
Yeah, and then, like, you know, like, bits where, like, Rizzo leaves his jelly beans on one side of the fence and has to, like, hop down, but then just, like, goes underneath to go get them. Like, it's just, it's full of little asides, it's full of little jokes. It's a very successful, I think the reason this movie came out 33 years ago, which is a crazy thing to say. Because, this movie, like, is so rewatchable in a way that many movies aren't. And I think that's because of there are layers to it, like we were saying. Like, there are these emotional very adult layers to it. There are these dumb, goofy layers to it. There are these kid-friendly layers to it. Like, this is really one of those movies that you can watch at any age and find something new or find something different or, like, find a thing you love about it. To me, this is the Christmas movie. Like, I don't have a movie I watch every year. Like, I have 2 movies I watch every year, actually. It's this one, and it's When Harry Met Sally, and I watch that on New Year's.
Yes.
And
yes.
We talk about that.
Goated.
That's goated film. But, like, these are, like, the 2 movies that I watch at this time of year. Because this is just such a, it's such a brilliant Michael Caine performance. It's such a brilliant Rizzo the Rat performance. Again, Miss Piggy, when she like is threatening to like kick his ass, is hilarious.
Always good. Always.
Always
good.
Miss Piggy threatening to kick someone's ass is always good TV. Like that is like, she is a queen and we love her.
We love her for that, for
we
sure.
We love her for just threats of violence and violence.
Yeah, threats of violence and violence and yeah, actual violence.
And actual violence that she commits. Absolute queen. But yeah, I fucking love this movie, dude. It's so funny. It's so delightful. I think, you know, there are possibly moments that work less than others, as we discussed. Mm-hmm. But overall, I'm still always excited to watch this movie. Like, I'm always excited. Like, again, like that intro, I'm so hyped by the end of it. Like,
totally.
Let's fucking go.
Totally. There is something to be said too, just about all of the kind of set design and costume design and puppet design that feels very 90s in a way that's comforting too. Like I'm aware of the like nostalgia part of my brain that even just sees the old Disney logo go and I'm like, oh man, I'm in for a good time.
Yeah, the 2D one where I'm like, fuck yeah bro.
Like it looks just a little bit grainier and it feels like I popped in a VHS. Like absolutely. I love that shit.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but no, it's a perfect warm fuzzy kind of movie for the holidays. Mm-hmm. Makes sense that it's still so successful to this day.
Totally. I mean, there's the staying power of this movie has been proven. I mean, I think really, like, there's a deep, deep millennial love for this movie that cannot be overstated.
But yeah, that's Muppet Christmas Carol. Muppet Christmas. I never know how to end these.
I don't
because we don't have our outro.
We don't have our outro. I mean, we'll be back. We're obviously doing a string of bonus episodes at the moment. And we'll be back to our regular season at some point. We'll let you know about that.
We'll let you know. We'll keep you
We'll let you know. But we are, like, listen, we're going to get back to TV.
We got some movies we got to get.
We have a mission statement. But we felt that we had to talk about Muppet Christmas Carol.
It's the journey, not the destination,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
All right, bye.
Bye.